the markets today? Well, don't. Weather worries have turned into chances of rain. Farmers may be happy, but the markets are not. Despite that, we'll try to get your Monday off on the right foot with AgriTalk.
Live from a more temperate shade of summer via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete, that's Greg Peterson. Then it's Nick Whitman and perhaps even Margie Eckelkamp. And in the final segment, Dr. Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council of America. And right after the news, a weather update from Michael Clark from BAMWX. And now, in for the Gone Fish and Chip Flory, hold me closer, China Dancer, from U.S. Farm Report, Tyne Morgan.
It's great to be with you on this Monday. And Davis, I don't know, why won't you convert from radio to TV? I could use your sparkle on the show every weekend. I'm not sure our viewers could, but I could.
Yeah, the sparkle doesn't translate to TV. I've tried, I'm very comfortable, very free, very able to speak freely on the radio. You put me in front of that camera and I become a stuttering buffoon. It just doesn't work. I don't know what it is.
Speaking of comfortable, not doing TV today and only radio, it's kind of nice. I may have to make the switch. It was one less thing to think about of, what am I going to wear today? Who cares?
Right? Yeah.
Who cares?
No one.
It's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm imagining, you're wearing some sort of formal gown. Perhaps there's a tiara involved. I don't know. Expensive jewelry draped here and there.
Yeah, let's just leave it with that because I don't want to ruin that vision. So let's just leave it. You pegged it. That's exactly what I'm wearing this morning.
would you then envision me in a full tuxedo, please? Like the one like George McFly wore in Back to the Future?
Oh, like definitely.
With the white coat?
Definitely.
And the black
I couldn't
pants?
See you any other way.
That's
especially not
today.
On a Monday. I mean, you came dressed to impress. That's obvious.
Right?
Dressed to impress. You know what's not impressive today? These markets or these temperatures. What's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on with the news this morning, Davis?
Well, if you'd like to start here, China has sanctioned a bevy of U.S. officials and congressmen following through on its promised retaliation for Washington's measures to hold Chinese officials to account for human rights abuses and tightening restrictions on Hong Kong's sovereignty. Senators Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio are among those facing sanctions, along with U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Samuel Brownback, and some others. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying said the behavior of U.S. officials and politicians had severely damaged China-U.S. relations and should be condemned, saying, quote, "The U.S. has no right to interfere. The Chinese government's determination to protect its sovereignty and crack down against terrorism, separatism, and extreme religious forces is unshakable." Tyne, and we've got just a little bit more on the China stuff, but any thoughts so far? We've sanctioned them last week. Now they're sanctioning us right back.
Right. Well, I mean, right after originally when we heard this news, I mean, we thought that China was going to backfire. We were going to see them stop buying ag products. And then we have that big buy confirmed on Friday. But the analysts that I had on the show this weekend, Davis, really think that, the pressure on the markets isn't just weather. It's also, with the president saying, I'm not even thinking about phase two. There's a lot of different things with some China concerns, still over the head. We continue to say, what do the markets not like? They don't like uncertainty. And we have more uncertainty in the market. And so it's kind of a combination of things that's really pressuring everything. But I know I can speak for most of our listeners that just say, we're ready for that chapter to be over.
Mm-hmm. Well, and meanwhile, the U.S. State Department has advised travelers and those U.S. citizens living and working in China to be on guard for what it calls the risk of arbitrary arrest. In a statement, the State Department said, quote, "Exercise increased caution in the People's Republic of China due to arbitrary enforcement of local laws for purposes other than maintaining law and order." The department noted citizens are at risk of being deported or detained if they send private messages deemed critical of Beijing, among other perceived offenses. And Tyne, the way I understand it, there's really no such thing as due process in the Chinese courts. So you probably don't want to get picked up in China, right?
I think there's a lot of things that don't make sense in China. There's a couple of things we're trying to figure out. And let's just say, I don't want to learn by doing, Davis. I'm going to steer clear. Steer clear.
That's a good idea. Well, I don't want to start a panic here, but it does bear noting. Some grocers are again having trouble staying stocked with goods from flour to soups as climbing coronavirus case numbers and continued lockdowns pressure production and bolster consumer demand. Popular items such as flour, canned soup, pasta, and rice remain in short supply. Now, Tyne, as of July 5, 10% of packaged goods, beverages, and household goods were out of stock. That's up from 5 to 7% before the pandemic. That's according to market research firm IRI. And we'll get to some of the numbers here. But again, let's not panic, everyone. But now doesn't really feel like a good time to be short here in the pantry. What do you think?
Well, I mean, everyone I've talked to, they're starting a garden this year. So,
me too.
But
yep.
Where we are, it's so dry. All of these goods I thought we were going to have out of the garden. That may quickly change. Let's just say we may be going to the store for some vegetables sooner
right.
than I thought, and more
Fair
so
enough.
Than I thought.
Well, on Sunday, the World Health Organization announced another record number of cases recorded in one day, with more than 230,000 cases reported around the world. Florida on Sunday became the first U.S. state to report an increase of more than 15,000 COVID-19 cases in a single day. That beat the increase of 11,694 reported by California on July 8, which Governor Gavin Newsom said had been bolstered by a backlog of tests in hard-hit Los Angeles County. And this is kind of one of those things that keeps coming up here. Okay, we've got more cases, but they've also increased testing by quite a bit too, Tyne.
Well, and reporting some of those tests are what we're hearing. Like they said, a backlog, and they come up all at once. So it looks like we have a spike. And I mean, definitely it's cause for concern in some states. We're seeing a spike where we are, and a lot of them from those that younger 20s to 30s that don't realize, that don't show any symptoms and don't realize they have it. So it'll be interesting, the story that this tells in the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. Looks like we've got Michael Clark standing by.
Michael Clark, go ahead, Matt. That thunder that I'm hearing, that lightning, Michael Clark from BAMWX. We are not seeing that in Western Missouri whatsoever, but we saw, I mean, Davis, I know you guys got some rain this weekend. Illinois got some rain this weekend. It really seems like the haves and have nots right now, but there are some holes in that map that where folks just keep missing those rains.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like a nice thunderstorm there. we've had some good weekend rains. Central Iowa, Missouri, they still really need it. And over the next, 7 days, I mean, adequate rain really is in the forecast for many locations, especially the central and the northern portions of the Grain Belt, I think, are looking at plenty of chances at thunderstorms here over the next 7 days.
Yeah, but this weekend we saw some green snap in corn. We've seen some powerful systems come through. Are those going to be severe again this week?
That's the concern. That's a great point that you bring up, is when you get thunderstorm clusters in these types of patterns, the rain doesn't always come in such a friendly fashion. And I still think that can be a risk, as we have the extreme heat set up to the south. Just along the northern periphery of the heat, those thunderstorm clusters can be a little bit unfriendly. So that is something that we do need to continue to at least keep an eye on.
Michael, we're talking about the heat during the day. What about at night?
Yeah, the nighttime lows are a big deal. Mid 70 degree low temperatures here coming up for a good chunk of the forecast in the next 2 weeks. So something to keep in mind, that it'll be warm at night.
All right, Michael Clark, thank you so much for joining us. Davis, what do we have on tap next?
Well, looks like we got Machinery Pete coming up. He's always got great stuff to tell, great stories to tell, and going to keep us informed on the world of iron.
The world of iron. With Machinery Pete. That's next.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Did you have that on purpose? Did you know what happened to our chickens at the house?
I
No, what happened to your chickens at the house?
Let's just say the girls had four chickens and we only have one leg left.
One leg left?
Yeah, something got them.
Oh, no.
It's okay. The girls learned the circle of life real quick. But James got his revenge last week. I don't know if he was challenging Jay Cutler or what, but let's just say a massacre went down on the front porch. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Typical Missouri fashion.
Are more chickens in the future then, or perhaps a little chicken wire? I mean, you know, you can confine them for their own safety. That's what Farm Journal Broadcast does to me. They confine me for my own safety.
And, they were and confined. It's not like I had them running wild. Those coons, they got in there. They unlatched it, got in there. I don't know. I feel like this is our out, Davis. I feel like this is our out to not have to have chickens. But the girls are heartbroken, so I imagine James is going to cave in. I don't know.
Maybe you need an Iowa boy to come down and help you build that coop. Hmm? Would that help, perhaps, you think?
Can we fire
up a rivalry right now? The fencing face-off.
Well, is it you or Chip? Which is the Iowa?
I'm not going down there.
I don't know. I feel like James would learn some bad habits. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Let's get on with the show this morning. Joining us on this Monday, the Machinery Pete. Greg, how are you doing on this Monday?
Hey, I'm doing great, time, but I'm not coming to Missouri to build you a chicken coop. So other than that, I'm doing super.
I will feed you. What more could you ask for, Greg?
I just don't have much game on the construction side. We'll leave that like David.
Well, obviously James doesn't either. Obviously James doesn't either because it didn't work out too well. But anyway, I got to quit throwing him under the bus or I'm going to receive a message here in a minute. Okay, Craig, this week you were supposed to be traveling, some big events. What's going on in your world?
Yeah, I was kind of bummed this morning. I woke up not feeling super well, so I had to back out. But I was supposed to be down in Williamsburg, Iowa. Our great friends at Kinsey had their Experience Kinsey Day. Kind of a media event where they had a drive and ride along on their new 4905 True Speed Planner. That bugger goes up to 12 miles per hour.
Wow.
And the new 4705 Planner. And then also their narrow transport Kinsey Mock Till unit. So, but my buddy Zach there with Kinsey is going to shoot some video. So stay tuned, folks. We'll have some cool looks at the latest from the great folks at Kinsey planting and tillage here coming up soon for you.
Well, from new to used, let's talk about a recent Case IH that you had that sold on the auction in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. What was it? What condition was it? What was it in? And did it surprise you?
Yeah, it was awesome condition. A number of Case IH tractors and equipment tying. It was a sale Thursday, like you said, in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Our great friends at Henslin Auctions had this sale. And Max from our Machinery Pete team was down filming it. We posted a couple of YouTube videos. But, yeah, my pick of the week is the 2002 Case IH MX-170 tractor on that sale. Just under $4,900 on it, really sharp. Brought $58,000, which, Stein, when I got looking at our Machinery Pete auction data, that's actually the highest auction price on an MX-170 since April 9th of 2011. And that was a sale I covered. I remember posting YouTube video on it. It was right down the road in southeast Minnesota here from where I live. That was a 99 model with 1,754 hours at 68K. So again, we're talking 9+ years. So that's the highest price, 58K last Thursday. They also had another 2002 model, an MX-270, much lower hours, 2,240 hours. That was also really strong at 71,000. Highest auction price there on MX-270 in 5.5 years. And a Case IH combine, they had an older model, 96, I think it was a 96 model, 2188, 5,272 engine hours, but really sharp, serviced every year at the local dealer. That brought $30,500 with no heads. And that is the second highest auction price on a 2188 without heads in 32 months. So they had a really good sale there Thursday on Sleepy Eye.
But, Greg, what drives that? I mean, you don't expect right now to hear about record auction prices. I mean, are we just seeing more, looking for gently used equipment? Or what is the ticket that makes some of this equipment go so high?
Yeah, I think actually we've sort of moved beyond the surprise point. I mean, it's weird, but the cost of new basically drives all this time. So here we have a bunch of 18-year-old 24-year-old combine, but the farmer that owned them, I think it was Dale and Gene Domeyer, Just exceptionally clean, well cared for. The reputation of the seller precedes everything. And even if you'd been looking for that model, an MX-170 or an MX-270 or 2188, you know, they're out there, but when the really sharp ones show up, you get 3-4 people that want them. And then you have to factor in this weird COVID situation where the online aspect has just ratcheted up tremendously. So now, you know, any geographic borders on bidding have completely evaporated. So people don't care if it's 7 states away. It's just like, ooh, look at that MX-170. That's what I've been looking for. You get 5 people bidding on it, and it goes for the, like I said, highest in 9 years, highest in 5 years. We've been seeing this actually going back all of 2020. It's just amazing.
You know, we're going to talk about this later on the show, Greg, but how COVID is changing the way ag does business. And we've been talking about online auctions and how there is more interest and the benefits for some folks looking for equipment to moving online. You know, does this amplify that even more? Does this speed up the move from some of these auctions being face-to-face to online?
No question. I've described it, Tyne, as lighter fluid on the grill. I mean, just take that old, just Kingston lighter fluid and just squeeze, just poof, that thing. That's what's happened. And so what gets lost is we've been doing online bidding for over 15 years. And the farm segment, you know, it's very comfortable with it. I'd had some of our great auctioneer friends tell me, Pete, we've had between 20 to 35% of the items sold on a farm auction either sell to an online bidder or runner up to an online bidder. That was before COVID. Post COVID or through COVID, it's just been unbelievable. The segment has leaned into this, and great auction companies and also upstart new auction companies that are online only have taken advantage. And the particular environment is actually perfect because, you know, it's challenging times in farm country, no question. So what that does, it creates the premium on the good condition used, which is, you know, it's just frankly so much cheaper than the new stuff that there's big, strong demand for it, even when times are tough.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Always fun to talk about some vintage items that you're keeping an eye on. What are some fun ones that you're really watching this week, Greg?
Yeah, there's some cool stuff. I'm going to be posting a blog, I think today, Tyne. It took place Saturday. I think it's called Farm Power of the Past from Greenville, Ohio. One of our Facebook followers, Rob Finkbein out there, shot some really cool pictures. I think cockshot tractors were the feature this year. So keep an eye out for that, folks, on our Machine Repeat Facebook and Twitter, Instagram. We'll have a link to that. But then also some cool vintage things. There was our friends at Sullivan Auctioneers last week had their annual collector sale. This was a 4-day online event this year. And some of the things that caught my eye, Tyne, how about a 1955 Chevy Bel Air convertible black? Just looked like the coolest thing ever. But $122,000.
Oh, my gosh.
I wondered if Davis was bidding on that one, but.
Oh, for sure. That definitely set in Davis's garage right now.
Chump change.
If you're into classic pickups, how about a 1970 Chevy C10 orange? Those colors in the late 60s, early 70s, just kind of awesome. Completely restored custom deal, $39,000. So all kinds of cool stuff there. Sullivan sold last, I think it was Tuesday through Thursday. And again, the dollars were there big time.
Wow. Greg. Something else I wanted to ask you about. What does it take? We have this Farm Journal Field Days coming up, and you can learn more at farmjournalfielddays.com. Really cool virtual field days. So you could actually still, you know, have the field day experience despite COVID. The world's changing. We're apparently changing with it, doing this virtual experience. But Greg, how do you get your own pavilion? Like, what are the requirements for that? Because from what I read, there's a Machine Repeat pavilion.
Really,
how does that happen? They didn't ask for a Tyne Morgan Pavilion, so I'm just wondering what it takes to get to that point.
Here's the deal. Back in 2005, I had the idea in my head that, you know, we love farm shows. Farm shows are great. It's fun to go for 3 days and walk around, get your back sore, your feet sore, but meet people, talk to people. It's awesome. But 15 years ago, I thought, this is like super, super inefficient. So we actually built a database of 5,500 manufacturers and broke down every type of equipment they make. So this Machinery Pete Pavilion will begin to scratch the itch of putting in place a list of companies, and not just a list. We want to go far beyond that and into the video. So when companies do their product demos, like Kinsey today out in the field showing them 4905, we're going to pull that together and make one spot so it's there for you 24/7, 365, where you can find out anything about machinery. Should be fun.
That's cool. All right. You can find out more at farmjournalfielddays.com. A lot of different things to go through, including the Machinery Pete Pavilion. All right. What's going on with these markets? We'll check in with Brian Grady. That's next on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Brian Grady joining us on this Monday. Brian, not a pretty day for the markets. Is it just weather that's weighing on prices right now?
Well, the fundamental pressure, Tyne, is coming from weather. And we had a poor close on Friday. Went into the weekend expecting some rains across the Corn Belt. Probably heavier than what was anticipated. Not all areas received rains, but those that did got more than what was anticipated. And now the forecast for this week call for more rain chances, a couple of those, and a little bit cooler temps than what was expected. Temperatures are supposed to be pretty much seasonal this week instead of the much above normal temps that some of the forecasts were calling for late last week. And as a result, that's putting pressure on the market, but we also have technical selling involved because we gapped lower last night in the overnight session, and we're just kind of building on ourselves here to the downside this morning. Funds are dumping longs that they got into in the bean market and pulling back on the corn rally.
So is the weather market over, Brian?
No, typically, we do see a couple waves usually. I think for now it is, unless the forecast changes, and that'll be something to watch because these weather models have been kind of all over the place. And I'm far from a meteorologist, but I'm at least smart enough to look at the updates when they come out a couple times a day and be able to discern that there has been some variance in there. So that'll be something to watch moving forward here.
But it does sound like we have this bearish tone right now.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Definitely okay. Bears are in control here to kick off the week.
All right, Brian Grady of Pro Farmer, thank you so much. Brian, stay with us. We'll have much more right here on this Monday edition of AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McBray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farming-focused podcast important to agriculture. Brought to you by Pivot Bio Proven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back on this Monday. First off, we have Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop, joining us. Monday morning blues for the markets, but what about the Eckelkamp household? Margie, how are things going on your Monday?
Yeah, no, it is a big, beautiful sunny day here in eastern Missouri. So we are going to be grateful for what we have.
Exactly. Well, on this Monday, we wanted to talk about how things are changing now with COVID. Farm Journal actually recently did a COVID-19 reintegration survey. We'll get into those results in a minute. But looking at some of the things that are happening right now and some ag businesses not allowing sales reps and some of their folks to go on farm right now, some of them very definitely tempering back how much travel some of their reps can have. And so we wanted to know how comfortable is a farmer right now with sales reps and outside vendors coming on their farm. And Margie, this is something you've been following for a while, though, because as things move, some things move online. It seems like in the retail world, that movement has been extremely slow.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, to look back at the trajectory of this, late winter, early spring, and how the pandemic affected ag retail. You had everything from the ag retail locations themselves closing to any visitors. Additionally, a lot of the shutdown and a lot of the governments, state governments, regulatory agencies dealing with their own reactions to the pandemic threw curveballs for ag retail when it came to pesticide application recertification, some, you know, Department of Transportation licensing issues. So there's definitely been a trajectory in a very short amount of time. We've lived lifetimes as far as taking those curveballs.
Yeah, definitely. And when you look at the challenges that we had in the beginning of the pandemic, and now, you know, Farm Journal in June did this survey. Again, it was called the Farm Journal COVID-19 Reintegration Survey. And Margie, it looks like Farm Journal surveyed 640 farmers and livestock producers. So a pretty big pool of folks. And about 45% of respondents, so nearly half of respondents, Margie, say that they have reservations about allowing sales reps back onto their operation right now due to COVID. Margie, does that number seems high compared to what I hear from some farmers. Does that surprise you?
It does. I think, you know, on the flip, there's 55% that say sales folks can come onto their operation immediately, right?
Right.
And it's interesting. I've spoken with quite a few ag retail salespeople, so folks that are out in the field, and they're reporting back that it really depends on their farmer customers' preferences. And they've seen reactions and requests across the board. Some folks are behaving as they did before the pandemic. Other folks are implementing some precautions or some new procedures. You know, we were hearing that even as early as seed delivery before planting season. Some farmers, you know, stayed back and sales reps were unloading seed themselves into the farmer's shed. And even today I've heard, you know, folks who have been able to go out there and wheat harvest has either started or completed in their area, and combine ride-alongs were happening as they had been before. So
you
and I have interviewed a lot of farmers, and I think there's a reason why farmers are independent business people, and that's because they like to apply their own personal preferences and how they do business, and this is really showing that in spades.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And then when you dig into the numbers a little bit more, Margie, in this Farm Journal COVID-19 reintegration survey, about 50% surveyed said that if a sales rep or an outside vendor does, or an input supplier does come on their operation, about 50% say they do want social distancing. They do want to see at least 6 feet, you know, between them always. 36% said, you know what, I'm not really concerned about having them present, so this doesn't apply to me. 18% said that they do want those vendors and sales reps to have proper PPE. So they want them to have a mask or they want them to have gloves. 17% said they want to make sure that only one rep is on that call. So only one rep's coming on the farm. And 11% said, you know what, I'm just not ready for visits on our operation yet. So as you see this mix of reaction from farmers in the retail space, Margie, is there a retail-wide standard operating procedure that these retailers are following right now, knowing that it's really a case-by-case basis, but really figuring out how to navigate this uncertainty and what preference farmers have on the farm right now?
Oh, I think overwhelmingly what I've heard from retailers say is that they're asking farmers up front, you know, how can we do business? How can I make you comfortable as we are reintegrating and having more face-to-face meetings? I think another interesting part of this survey is we are digging into the data and we'll be able to offer some additional insights dividing out livestock farmers from row crop producers. Obviously, the environment and the working environments are different there, and I think there will be interesting insights to gain. And then, Tyne, I was going to dig in, and the other interesting thing that I found from the survey is that only 16% of farmers are recalling having received a formal correspondence from their retailers about their reentry plans, about how business is going to, you know, reintegrate. And I think that's a real opportunity for folks, is to be communicating with farmers about the measures that they're taking in any kind of formalized way, so that farmers know that these suppliers and the input companies really do care about their preferences and how we are all walking forward this crop year.
Yeah, Davis, I mean, you talk to a lot of input suppliers. I mean, and do you hear that they are communicating? Are they still trying to navigate exactly what to do, what not to do right now?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've mentioned it before, one of the interesting things is how it's impacted land auctions. We've talked before about how different companies are having land auctions where you know, it may be on site or at a specific location, but everybody stays in their pickup trucks and bids from in there. So when you talk about, you know, the percentage of farmers who, yeah, sure, you can come on to my place here and we can chat, but I want you to wear a mask. I want PPE to be in place here. You know, it's definitely becoming a concern. I wonder, do we have numbers on how comfortable farmers were with people like that showing up on their place before COVID? I mean, is there a certain amount of, well, just leave me alone, I got work to do type, that maybe already figured in?
Yeah, I mean, Marky, I don't think we do because there was no reason to take that survey before, right? We didn't have a reason like we did with COVID.
And I had a really interesting conversation, oh gosh, it was just on Friday, with somebody out in the field in ag sales. And they even said very openly and candidly, early this spring, they felt like they weren't even able to do their job because they could take folks out to lunch, right? And make that connection and facilitate business in that way and really build the relationship there. And I think there is that element, guys, of how comfortable you are with who in an ag sales role.
Well, yeah, now if we're talking about a free lunch there, for me, you're going to get a 99% approval rating on that. You want to take me to lunch?
Oh, well, this professional is stellar, and they figured out the workaround, which is now instead of just going out to lunch to the local bar, they just bring lunch to the farmer, and the farmer's so happy to meet with them. So don't worry, Davis. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
And Margie, what I've also heard from some major agribusiness companies that now every morning they are really monitoring how many COVID cases are in a county, and they will they have a map that if there's, you know, if there's a rise of cases or if there's something alarming, that county's red. And if that's red, as a sales rep, you're not able to go to that county. You're not able to go visit a farm. You're not able to go visit a retailer. You're not able to buy a farmer. You're not able to do any of that. And so I know that that's erring on the side of caution right now, but it seems like there's still a lot of uncertainty on what you can do right now and what you can't do right now. And especially with some of these businesses being very conservative in how they approach business as this pandemic is still going on.
Yeah, I think I would also want to share two big successes from this last spring, although there are many, but one is that agriculture as an industry really saddled up and got a lot of work done. And I think getting that distinguishing label as being essential and being able to move about and be on the roads to get the fertilizer in the seed and what was needed to get the crop in the ground, agriculture answered the call. The other success that I would mention is just everybody's flexibility and willingness to adopt technology to help make their job continue as seamlessly as possible. We do have a poll on our website right now asking our audience, since COVID-19, has your business, you know, using technology more or less or the same to engage with your farmer customers? Right now, it's kind of split between either more technology or the same amount of technology, but nobody is saying less. And that speaks to kind of what you were referring to earlier as far as COVID-19. Maybe it hasn't brought about change, but rather it's accelerated changes that we're already developing and trends that we were already seeing. And technology, of course, and how ag retailers, how input suppliers interact with farmers is one of those mega trends.
Yeah, and real quick to build on that, the reintegration survey also asks, has COVID-19 pandemic caused you to purchase more of your inputs online? 61% said no, but 39% said yes. And do you think that that number continues to evolve, Margie?
Well, I think it's going to be something we're going to watch. And we have been doing an annual online input purchasing survey across Farm Journal. And we'll have those results in the scoop as far as how farmers are buying specific to their ag inputs. So fertilizer, seed, crop chem, right? How they're buying those things online.
All right, Margie, thank you so much. We appreciate you joining us. And you can read more about this reintegration survey on agweb.com. All right, well, coming up on AgriTalk on this Monday, if you're tired of the heat, well, so is the Texas cotton crop. We are hearing some troubles with growing cotton in Texas. We'll talk to the National Cotton Council just about crop conditions overall and demand domestically, despite COVID-19. We'll talk about all of that coming up on AgriTalk. Because we all just want to be big rock stars and live in hills.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back on this Friday. Very excited to have with us Dr. Gary Adams, President and CEO of National Cotton Council. Gary, staying cool down there? How are things in the South right now?
Well, it's we're looking at a warm week and a little bit dry in some parts of the South, that's for sure, but doing well. Good to be with you today.
Thanks, Gary. Speaking of that dryness, I'm just hearing some horror stories, especially in parts of West Texas and the Texas Panhandle. They had a rough start to the season. It seems like the rain is not coming. The heat is, and the cotton crop, as a result, is not liking these weather conditions right now.
Certainly, as we look at the situation in West Texas, you're right. It has been it's been a tough start to the year, and you look at the drought monitor. The dry conditions are expanding. We're really worried right now about some of the dry land acres in West Texas. I'm afraid we have lost a number of those acres, and even if this persists, the irrigated acres will see a hit in yield potential. So that's, I think, as we look across the Cotton Belt, that's certainly one major area of concern.
So are you expecting a large percentage of abandonment at this point? I mean, at what point will you be able to tell?
Well, right now it's mainly anecdotal evidence in terms of what we hear, particularly as you look up into the high plains of Texas, that there has been some significant abandonment. I guess we start to get a better sense of that when we get numbers in August. USDA will release their first survey-based estimate of the cotton crop in August, and so that'll give us a little bit of a better idea. And I will say, even when we look back to last Friday's report, USDA did make some adjustments in their harvest to planted ratio, showing a little bit higher abandonment as look across the aggregate. But the state level numbers we'll get a first glimpse of in August.
Okay, looking at production, Gary, just remind us how much of the cotton is grown in kind of that West Texas area, that cotton patch.
The West Texas part, you're probably looking at 40% or so of the acres. So it's a significant part of the acres, particularly when we look at the state of Texas as a whole being 50 to 55% of acres. So that's going to be the area to watch. It certainly has the potential to move the U.S. crop around. I think outside of West Texas, we're seeing the crop progress and be in reasonably good shape. But that's clearly the area where we're of most concern.
Yeah, real quick, let's hit on that. Let's move to the Southeast. We know they got a really wet start, but after they got things planted, things are coming up. I know it's a little too early to tell in some areas, but how is the condition of the crop outside of Texas?
I would say overall, if we talk about the Southeast, the crop is improving. The area that really had the slowest start due to a wet spring was the Carolinas, but even as we look at those weekly crop condition reports that come out of USDA, we're seeing improvements in the North Carolina and the South Carolina crop. So I think there's some really good potential in the Southeast crop. Then as we look at the Mid-South, again, like overall acres are down in the Mid-South, but the crop ratings are certainly looking relatively positive right now. The only exception to that is probably when we look at the Boot Hill of Missouri. It's showing some concerns.
Let's talk about cotton prices, Gary. You know, we saw a dramatic fall in cotton prices from kind of mid-February down to the beginning of April. It seems like prices are now trending a little bit higher. What is supporting cotton at this point? I mean, is it a return of demand? What is it?
Well, it's not any widespread return of demand that we can tell. I think right now what we're seeing on the price side is the fact that we do have the concerns, obviously, we've talked about in the U.S. crop. I think we're still seeing some support coming out of perhaps the sales that are going to China. So that's given a little bit of support to the market. But again, I think we have to realize we were coming off of a fairly low level when we traded down into the 50s, and now we're getting up into the low 60s, still not at a level that most producers are going to find that attractive.
Yeah, is that even break even for most producers at this point?
For most producers, no, unfortunately, it's not going to be unless they just have a really above average yield. But otherwise, normal yield, that's going to be a level that falls short of their cost of production.
Gary, before we get into domestic demand, let's hit on China a little bit more. We know we saw a loss there, and we know, you know, when you look at MFP payments 2.0, I mean, that was really, a lot of it was catered to the cotton, just that major loss of demand. But where we sit now in 2020, are we seeing China come back in a remarkable way, or is it other countries that are making up for that loss?
we've seen China come back in to some degree. It is still not to the level that you would hope to see out of a phase one agreement. I think as we look at the sales, and we do have sales on the books to China, they're still sitting at around the second or third largest export customer for U.S. cotton. But again, when we compare back to where they've been historically and what we would hope to see out of a phase one agreement, they're still lagging that pace that's necessary. Hopefully we'll see a little bit of improvement as we go through the second half of the year. But again, just in this overall environment that we're in with coronavirus and the impacts on retail demand, I think it's going to be a tough one as we go forward.
Okay, let's look at domestic demand. A couple weekends ago on the show, Gary, I talked about this cotton variety, this new cotton variety that you can literally trace it back from the clothes that you wear or the flag that you have in your yard, all the way back to the bale of cotton that it was produced. And really, you know, these farmers said, this is the sustainability that's going to keep my son farming, because we are growing a market and a story for American-grown cotton. Is that helping domestic demand? Are we seeing domestic demand hold steady, or are we even seeing that growing?
Well, I think the thing we got to look at now, and I do think there's some opportunities as we look at a focus on made in the USA and growing domestic demand, but I think the thing we've got to look at right now is just what is happening from an overall economic situation and the impacts of the restrictions that are in place for the COVID-19 pandemic, and the fact that so many of the retail outlet centers have been closed. The retail shopping has shut down. So as we look at the retail level, we're seeing clothing and apparel that's been up to as much as 90% off from what it was before the pandemic. And then when we look at our U.S. mills, right now they're spinning cotton at a level that's only about 20% of capacity. So again, they're really feeling the brunt of this slowdown in consumer demand. And we've also seen some of these mills try to redirect their production lines to things such as PPE, personal protective equipment. Right. Again, just trying to help in the response to the current situation.
Gary, thanks so much for joining us on this Monday. I really appreciate it.
Well, certainly glad to be with you, and hope you have a very good day.
Right. Thank you so much, Gary. Davis, real quick, got some breaking news for us?
Oh, yes, what is it?
Kansas State Fair has canceled. They will still have some livestock events, but Kansas State Fair is canceled. So another one that's off this year. Thanks for joining us this Monday. Joe Vaklovic joined you, AgriTalk, this afternoon.